Welcome to the new Health Club podcast. Our now has changed forever. The new Health Club is where the conversation around the new era of mental health, mental wellness, and this now, the new now, begins. I think that psychedelics will play a big part in this. We are talking about a completely new lifestyle here. So, what are LSD, magic mushrooms, psilocybin and MDMA, or ketamine, exactly doing for our mental health, personal progress, and optimization? Will they change our lifestyles forever? Will they be a big part of this new normal? On the New Health Club podcast, I talk to real innovators, thought leaders, and disruptors from the emerging new world of psychedelics, mental health, and mental wellness. Please enjoy. This podcast deals with drugs. Drugs are dangerous. Furthermore, the use and or trade of drugs can be punishable by law. Please keep this in mind. This podcast is not suitable for people under the age of 18. Hi, and welcome to a new episode of the New Health Club podcast. And welcome to our first COVID-19 special. At this moment, it becomes important to reflect on mental wellness and new emotions we are experiencing. It also becomes important, I think, to communicate ideas that are supporting us in these times. Today, it's all about the health workers in the front line. And I talked to Karen Doherty from Ontario in Canada. She's a psychotherapist and psychoanalyst, and she came up with a brilliant idea, I think. She created a network of therapists that help to support nurses, doctors, and everyone working on the front line. Because at this point for them, this can feel like going into a war zone or being into a war zone with no end attached to the date when this war zone might end. Which means that they might have to deal with PTSD later, the so-called post-traumatic stress disorder, or they're already dealing with pre-TSD, as Karen explains. The plain fear of what can happen to them if they go to work in the morning or come home to their families later at night. Are they going to infect somebody? Are they feeling like they're guilty of being healthy? And all of these questions that come up in kind of a pre-TSD condition, like Karen explains. So listen to Karen and her toolkit, how to put together a support system for the health workers and how you can actually just, let's say, copy-paste this. Enjoy the podcast. So maybe you just introduce yourself quickly.
I'm Karen Doherty. I'm a registered psychotherapist and a psychoanalytic candidate and a documentary filmmaker in Toronto, Canada. And I'm the founder of the Ontario COVID Mental Health Network.
Perfect. Thank you for doing this because, I mean, I literally just, I woke up one morning a couple of days ago and I was like, I'm going to Google PTSD and health workers. I just woke up and I had this idea and then I Googled it and your great enterprise or your great idea came up that you basically put together some of your colleagues and offer free therapy for health workers right now. So maybe you explain a little bit how this happened.
The word free has such connotations. So we're saying pro bono. Mm-hmm. Pro bono teletherapy for COVID frontline workers in the province of Ontario during the pandemic to fill a gap in our public health system, which really undervalues mental health support. Mm-hmm. So we're filling a crucial gap right now because there's not enough funding for mental health support. And we know as mental health workers that it's key to keeping our frontline workers resilient enough to do the work that they need to do to keep us alive. Mm-hmm. You know?
Exactly.
So that's what we're doing. I put the word out to colleagues with this idea less than 2 weeks ago. And within a few hours of putting the word out, I had the website up, we had the form, and now, less than 2 weeks later, we have 800 licensed healthcare professionals just in the province of Ontario who have fielded, we've sent over 400 referrals. It's needed, so necessary, which we knew. We just didn't think it would blow up this big, you know, but it's obviously hugely needed. And it's partially because we're seeing these terrible images coming from other countries like Italy and so on, just seeing the mayhem, the catastrophe, and seeing that we're not there yet, but it's coming. How bad will it be? When will it come? How long will it last? All that uncertainty is, you know, that's the stuff of anxiety, uncertainty. And we're not used to being able to see these kinds of storms on the horizon coming, you know. So mostly we've been seeing pre-TSD.
Pre-TSD, you know? that is like your imagined, like an imagined trauma? Or
yes, the trauma that's coming.
Okay.
Yeah.
Pre-TSD. Okay, that's
pre-TSD,
interesting.
Yeah. Okay. And, you know, and now, of course, the situation is changing on the ground every day. So the first people who were writing in asking us for referrals, because that's what we do, we're a referral matching service, they were anxious about what was to come. Would there be enough supplies? Would there be enough human resources, facilities? How many people are going to get sick? Are they going to get sick? Like all the uncertainties. Now we're actually seeing cases filling our hospitals. So it's starting now in Ontario. And so now the calls are different. We don't have enough supplies. We don't have enough facilities. We don't have, our shifts are too long. People are not adequately trained. And nurses and doctors are getting sick here. So it is
everywhere,
already.
I think, right? And I mean, what would you say, I mean, what is the main kind of tool, or what is the main thing that or support that they actually need? I mean, like you say, they work like very long shifts. But what I read in this article about you is that this doctor was quoted saying that they come home to their children and they've seen, like, I mean, it's almost like it sounds like they've been in a war during the day.
Nuclear, you know, sort of accident.
Yeah.
That's how the virus is being perceived, as like some kind of, you know, radiation poisoning, or it's the airborne toxic event. I don't know if you've read Don DeLillo's White Noise, but it's, you know, it's like it's in the air or something. And of course, if you're in the hospital, you feel the toxicity just sort of like psychically. And so when you're coming home, it's Silkwood. You want to take a shower, you know, radiation cleansing shower, and you can't get yourself clean enough, and then you don't want to hug your children.
And what do you think, I mean, now that it's changed from pre-TSD to PTSD slowly, I guess, like in a couple of months. So what do you think, what is the main, like, harm that health workers are actually would take away from this, or are taking away from it, like, every day right now? What is the main thing?
With the stress.
The stress. Okay.
I mean, aside from the actual physical danger.
Well, besides that, yeah, sure.
The absolute stress of making life or death decisions, having to make ethical choices, or worried about having to make ethical choices that they're not prepared to do. Do I save this person and not this person? You know, those kinds of things. Terror. And still, always underlying it is the fear of taking it home. But also, people are burned out already, you know, because stress is very exhausting. And we know that stress is one of the worst sort of physical ailments that you can have.
But when you say burned out, I mean, there's this, I did a lot of podcasts recently where a lot of people working in the mental health industry say burnout means basically depression. And there was this little study, like, not really elaborated, that I just read before we talked about a study that did it in Wuhan with health workers. And in the end, like 50% were clinically depressed after the main event. So, I mean, tell us how, if you want to do this in other countries or cities even, how would you recommend, what structure is needed to do this very fast?
What structure? I don't know. I mean, you have to have the right people on the right, you know, you have to have the right team. And you have to be able to get the word out, first of all, we have 800 licensed mental health professionals. Not all of those people have the adequate training to support an ER doctor, for example. Mm-hmm. So we're trying to match people like an ER doctor or an ER nurse with someone who has training in a hospital setting, who understands what they're up against. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, you know, if it's just someone who, you know, has sort of does general therapy with kids or adolescents, they're not going to have the ability to listen adequately, to understand adequately. That's all that we can provide as mental health workers, because we can't fix it, right? We can't fix the problem. We can't make the hospital have more supplies. We can't, you know, we can give them an ear and a very particular way of listening so that they can then, you know, sort of have the resilience to go back and do what they need to do. But that's all we can really offer. Mm. And then we can also offer maybe their first experience asking for help, getting some help, understanding what that is, and maybe making it possible and less stigmatized to go and get more help later.
And do you think there should be if you talk about resilience, what would you say? I mean, how could you create resilience for yourself as a health worker right now? Is it basically asking for help and to give this kind of heavy burden away to somebody to kind of help you go through it? Is that basically the main thing, right? I mean, to create that resilience.
Yeah. And not just compartmentalizing, because that leads to stress. So actually kind of, yes, sometimes you can think of it in different ways. Psychically, are you extruding, exactly what are you doing with the anxiety? But you are putting it into someone else who's metabolizing it for you and handing you back, you know, your experience in a more digestible fashion, so then you're calmer. Mm-hmm. That's sort of a basic way of saying what therapy does in crisis.
Okay.
And then, we can say that builds resilience. What is resilience but the capacity to better tolerate the uncertainties and the storms, like to not know? To be okay with not knowing, because people want certainty. They want to know, when's it coming? How many masks do we need? You know, like how long is it going to last? And we can't give them that, but we can allow them to see that it's okay to not know. That's it. You have to be okay with not knowing.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And there were already a couple of articles addressing the situation, like after, let's say the phase of PTSD for not only everybody else, but especially for these people who went, like, again, I feel it's like everything I hear, it's like being in the front lines of war almost.
Yes.
So, and of course, there are already a lot of kind of talks about MDMA therapy for PTSD treatment, for example. What do you think about that? I mean, is that something that will come through this, maybe stronger in the focus
that's
again?
So interesting. I know that's what your interest is in general, and I do follow those stories. I'm always interested in especially war trauma, treating war trauma, and I've seen a lot of PTSD studies with MDMA and other psychedelics and so on. I'm sure. These are doctors, so they're probably going to be curious. I just don't know how that will be done in a country that has such stringent, laws. But we do have some folks at York University here in Toronto who are dedicated to those kinds of studies, psychological studies, MDMA.
Well, I feel in Toronto it's actually a really big psychedelic community, I feel. I mean, that's my impression.
Ayahuasca.
Yeah. So
There's lots of ayahuasca retreats north of the city, and lots of microdosing. That's among my young patients.
Oh, really?
A lot of microdosing. Oh, yeah.
LSD and psilocybin or what?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So, I mean, that's interesting to say that around your young patients, because I feel
millennials.
Because I mean, I feel like in general, I just had Ayelet Waldman on a podcast who wrote A Really Good Day, How Microdosing Saved My Marriage and My Life, basically. It's a really good book. you should really read it. And I mean, but I mean, it's kind of times right now, it's like there's nothing relatable to what's happening right now. So do you think as a therapist that therapy also has to kind of step up the game in a little bit, and just because therapy is still needed, even if you do psychedelics, it's just not, it's kind of an, I mean, the best thing is if they go hand in hand, basically. So do you think about that as a therapist already? Like how this could come in the next 2 years for people like that?
I keep my eye on it, as I said, and I'm very interested in it. I don't know how it's going to be possible for us, although we've just made, you know, we've just legalized cannabis in Canada,
right, yeah.
So that's,
I mean,
a big shift.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, our colleges are, like our licensing bodies, are very strict about ethics and so on, and this is one thing that nobody would be allowed to do.
Mm.
But that may shift over time, given what we're seeing in some of the more, like some of the larger social changes. So if it ever does become, you know, legal, mm-hmm, to do with my patients, and I think given my training and study, because I think there would have to be courses and stuff introduced, mm-hmm, into the colleges,
mm-hmm,
that I would not be averse to that if I saw, you know, I'm interested in all tools to help my patients.
And I mean, like, in regards to your other patients right now, what would you say is the main fear that people have right now? I mean, is it, of course, the unknown and everything, but what is like something that's really significant to you that you maybe didn't really expect to hear that might come out of this?
It's so hard, you know, because every patient is bringing their own current circumstances and their history to bear on how they're experiencing this. So some people are terrified financially, you know, of their future opportunities. Some people are much more relaxed suddenly because now everybody's doing what they always do, which is hunker down and stay home, and now they feel less guilty about it. I mean, everybody's a different response.
Sure.
So I think the biggest fear is, like, this is, everyone knows that this is a turning point in world history. We're living in it in a way that, I mean, even 9/11, I'm not sure, felt quite like this. I'm not sure about how you feel about that, but having gone through 9/11, it, not even that felt like this. The world changed that day, but it's so global right now. So what world is going to, what is the world going to be?
But I mean, if you just said it, it's like, because it's so global, shouldn't there be like already a central kind of, I don't know, organization for therapy where every health worker could call in right now, like with the World Health Organization or UN or something? I mean, it seems like a total, like, makes total sense.
They're not agile enough.
That's an interesting thing, right? Yeah.
Yeah. Government should be behind all of this. They absolutely should.
Mm.
This is my profession, so of course I do think it should be valued and value placed on it, but there's no time. Mm-hmm. We're in the midst of a crisis, mm-hmm, but the mm-hmm government just isn't able to move as quickly as, you know, mm-hmm, sort of individuals and grassroots on the ground. How interesting is that?
Yeah.
I mean, look at the states, how late their response has been. I mean, they still don't have adequate testing. And we're right in the thick of it.
Mm-hmm.
They just can't move fast enough, and they're blaming each other, and, you know, and like, just go. You have to be able to change procedures and process and let go of some of your, you know, over regulating in times of crisis.
I mean, if somebody wanted to do this, I mean, it seems like it's always things that happening now happen in terms of a community, or like, for example, Ayelet, like we talked about her earlier, she did this, and her husband founded this organization called Feed ER, like where they bringing restaurants, they cook from the area and they bring it to the ERs, or the feed the ERs, basically.
Mm-hmm.
So it seems like everything happens from a community and then grows bigger and hopefully like as big as possible. So what is your, let's say, if somebody wanted to do this in other cities or like bigger cities like Berlin, New York, whatever, like what is your advice? How would you start?
Well, I actually got the idea from New York. That's okay. How I found out about it in the first place. There was I was just scrolling social media one day and saw a group in New York offering the same, and I just looked at what they did and sent out a message. This is how I did it. I sent out a message to my network, my social network, mm-hmm. and said, this is what I'm seeing in New York. Can we do something like that here? Is there something like that here? And within 2 hours, I had great people who'd gotten back to me, a person who was a tech person, like a great friend of mine who's a writer mm-hmm. and a web person, and then a psychoanalyst colleague and a colleague from, like, a friend from my childhood who happens to be an administrative guru. I had no idea. She was 10 years old when we were friends. You know, that's Facebook for you, right? And that's the core team. Mm-hmm. And so you need to get a good team of people, and mm-hmm. then you just, this is what I did. I just went, damn the torpedoes. And then we had it up and I sent it out, and then I called this CBC, which is our national public broadcaster. They did a piece.
Sure, yeah.
And very quickly I had, you know, it was up and running, and now we've been, you know, just trying to keep up with ourselves and put processes in place. I think if it's possible for people to, you know, reach out to government, the problem is if I had have done that, I would still be waiting.
For sure. I mean, also, I think that, like, let's say the old perception of people who work there at the moment in hospitals is like, well, they kind of worked it. They know how it is to work in a hospital. So, and I think this whole idea of mental health, which is also a big part of the new health club, how this is changing right now, is like, well, okay, but they've just been sent to the Third World War, and they don't work in a hospital anymore, kind of.
Yeah.
So, yeah. And I think that nobody seems to, I mean, everybody's like, yeah, bring them food, which is fantastic and everything. And it's like, whoa, they're clapping everywhere and they're singing for them. But since I read this thing about you, even before, I was like, but what if they come home in the evening and they had like 20 people that they couldn't help, and they just had to make a decision that they hated, and now do they hate themselves? Do they hate their family? Yeah. Do they feel they're guilty because they survived, or all these kind of questions that must come up in you like every 2 minutes kind of, I feel.
Oh, so. I know. It's, that's what we're hearing. And so it's definitely needed. And I encourage people to do what they can in their jurisdiction, depending on, you know, it's always going to be different, right?
Yeah.
So, yeah. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Have a good day. Stay safe. Okay, and I keep you posted.
Take care.
Okay. Bye.